FT. But be warned, that fantastic feeling will soon follow. Thanks for supporting KPFT Houston.
Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner's on controls. Are you impressed with how upbeat I sound? I think that I'm doing actually quite a good job of being upbeat in perhaps one of the darkest days in American history.
Well, let's give you some more bad news. Maybe you'll feel even better.
Oh, you got some? I mean, I have plenty. You have any to contribute?
I guess you heard the result today.
Oh, yeah, that's why I'm saying that I'm doing a very professional job.
What Amy Goodman had to say, I that was an amazing statement.
What did Amy Goodman have to say?
Behind it. She said that a bunch of researchers are copying files on climate change like you wouldn't believe, and they're
yes.
going to even take them out of the country.
That's true. They're afraid that the Trump administration, and you might want to turn off the mic because I hear you mumbling, the Trump administration has climate scientists so scared that, yes, I heard at least maybe a week ago that they're starting to copy all of their data and trying to transfer it to places where the Trump administration can't simply delete it. Okay, yeah, I see there's already a phone ringing, which reminds me, 713-526-5738 is the phone number. It is, as usual, open forum, but I think I know what we're going to end up talking about. Okay, let's start with bad international news, so we'll kind of put off the inevitable here. First of all, apparently there was what appears to be a terrorist attack in Western Berlin. A truck rammed into a crowd a la Nice style. 9 dead at last report. And the incident has been described by the White House as an apparent, quote, terror attack. The Russian ambassador to Turkey was assassinated. Just can't get enough good news. Apparently, an off-duty Turkish bodyguard, nobody knew he was off-duty, he was there, apparently assassinated the diplomat as revenge for Russia's war in Aleppo. And let's see. China said it would return the seized U.S. naval drone that they unlawfully took about a week ago. Trump said, keep it. And then there's the Brexit situation. In the Financial Times, I was looking at an article. By the way, I've got links to all of this stuff. You can go to thinkwingradio.com, look for today's show announcement, and, of course, the audio isn't there yet because I'm doing it now, but you can go and explore all the links and articles that I've been referring to here and probably then some. So the talking about Brexit, is it going to be hard or soft? And there's an article that says there's a third possibility, train crash Brexit. Okay. Good news. Here's something that's sort of domestic / international. According to thinkprogress.org, because increasingly I'm finding I can't go to major media. I just have to kind of try to assess the alternate media that I can rely upon. So the headline is, under political pressure, Kuwait cancels a major event at Four Seasons and switches it to Trump's D.C. hotel. After Election Day, it says, everything changed. The embassy of Kuwait allegedly canceled a contract with the D.C. hotel, citing political pressure to hold its National Day at the Trump International Hotel. A source tells Think Progress that the Kuwaiti embassy, which has regularly held the event at the Four Seasons in Georgetown, abruptly canceled after members of the Trump Organization pressured the ambassador to hold the event at the hotel owned by the president-elect. The source, who has direct knowledge of the arrangements between the hotels and the embassy, spoke to Think Progress on the condition of anonymity because the individual was not authorized to speak publicly. And Think Progress was able to review documentary evidence confirming the source's account. So Kuwait has now signed a contract with the Trump International, adding that a representative with the embassy described the decision as political. Boy, we got a lot of phone calls here. Okay, I have one open line still, 713-526-5738. Let's see. Trump-Sinclair deal underscores decline of media. President-elect Trump's son-in-law told a group of business executives off the record. Well, off the record would mean, you know, that we don't know it's the son-in-law, so not so much off the record. That the campaign had a deal with the Sinclair Broadcasting Group to receive more favorable coverage in exchange for more access. So in other words, you can get more access to the lies that the Trump people will either tell or imply, which Sinclair Broadcasting will now report as news because they'll get more access for more favorable coverage, which is the equivalent of no coverage at all because you can't trust it. And Sinclair Broadcasting owns 154 stations across the country. Here's a good one. Newt Gingrich suggests that Trump should pardon advisors who break the law. That's according to The Hill. Jeb Bush is calling for a constitutional convention to impose term limits on members of Congress, which, of course, doesn't need a constitutional convention, especially these days. That would be the worst nightmare. A constitutional amendment would be the way to go, assuming you could get it passed, assuming it was a good idea, assuming it was a well-written amendment. Okay, we got a bunch of folks, so let's see. I guess Jerry is going to be up first. Jerry, how are you?
I'm all right.
You're on the air. Are we feeling blue?
Oh, not really. I was expecting the result that we got, like I said.
The electoral cowards?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that necessarily.
I would. I did.
There's, and that whole thing is more complicated, as I've discussed with you on and off the air. There, the fallout from not having done that way could have been pretty ugly too, and everything possibly worse.
Well, but there were alternatives. They did not have to necessarily vote for Hillary. They could have. It depends, of course, on the state. Like in Maine, somebody tried to, one of the electors tried to vote for Bernie Sanders,
Bernie Sanders
was not on the ballot, so they said that would be a void vote. So he changed it, I think, to Hillary. But in different states, there are different rules. And, of course, you can argue that no state has the right in any way, shape, or form, constitutionally speaking, to regulate an elector who is technically a federal official. But that's a whole other thing. That's never been tested in court. But, they could have voted for a third party. There were apparently Hillary electors who were willing to turn their vote to a moderate Republican. That would be a consensus vote. So, these electors are the Republican side. They're either radicals or cowards. I mean, there's just no other way to put it.
Like I said, there was no way they were going to fall on their sword for you or for the country even. And that's, that's sad, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah, that's true, but no less deplorable.
Well, I don't know. I can imagine a whole bunch of Trump supporters getting very upset and, like I said, all hell breaking loose. But
you think we're going to have a peaceful Trump administration?
No.
No.
No, but I don't think that you'd be giving them a pretext. You'd be giving them a good reason if you turned around and pulled that on them.
I think that it would have been worth the risk, not because he's not my candidate, but because I have a genuine fear for the continuity of the Republic. I mean, if you listen to the stuff I was reading, he's already merging the United States government with his various Trump organizations. He's not even inaugurated yet. And these people have no sense of, I mean, they're talking about, well, we're going to make good decisions and there might be great deals. We're not going to do that. That's bull. They are already, I mean, if on the day that he is inaugurated, God forbid it gets that far, but it probably will. On the day that he's inaugurated, he will already be committing at that moment impeachable offenses. At that moment.
Well, it may very well be, but, you know, you got to get, you know, you've got to get the Congress to sit there and
well,
go after him.
There is the 25th Amendment where essentially Pence could essentially usurp the presidency, which, you know, I'm no Pence fan, but at least he's a rational extremist as opposed to a crazy kleptocratic extremist. You know, these are the choices we're like making these days.
Well,
I don't
so
know.
Far, you're not even getting to make that choice.
Well,
yet anyway.
I mean, this is not over. This would have been the easiest place, if that's a word to use, to put a fire break between the Trumps and the United States of America. But this is not over. So for those of you out there who are feeling depressed, I feel you, but it's not over. There's even an article that I might read substantial bits of, but I'm not going to do it at this instant. I have a bunch of callers, so Jerry, I'm going to let you go a little earlier than usual.
Okay.
But I appreciate your calling, and if we have a little time later and you want to call back, that'll be fine.
Okay, great.
All right, take care.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, you're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. This is Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig, Bob Gartner on controls. Remember that you can help support KPFT by going to KPFT.org, KPFT.org, pick an amount of money to contribute, and hopefully this show on the drop-down menu. And, boy, we can use small, medium, or large donations, whatever you can manage. You can go to my website at thinkwingradio.com and go to various articles and links and blog posts and audio archives from my shows and other things. And you can follow me on Twitter at thinkwingradio. So, next up is Art. Art, thank you for calling. You're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
No, just fine. Listen, I just wanted to mention that I see how Trump's attitude towards the CIA and FBI is. Kind of reminds me of a little boy telling his dad that, you know, mommy wants me to do this and mommy wants me to do that. And then the dad said to the little boy, oh, don't listen to your mommy. She's crazy. You know, it's so dysfunctional. He needs to listen to them. They're not, you know, they have the intelligence. Yeah, they've made mistakes, but the attitude he has towards the FBI and CIA, I know he's going to be impeached. I could see it.
You know,
and Pence will take over, and maybe they saw that from the beginning. I don't know. I'm listening.
Maybe. You know, if they want to, Congress convenes, I think, on January 2nd or 3rd. Assuming that the desire and the will are there, they could literally have articles of impeachment ready to go by January 20th.
Yeah.
So
it's a joke.
It's
sad that, you know, well, I could get into all kinds of, you know, reasons why he should have been,
I think
he won, and, you know.
I think the scariest thing is that they've already acknowledged, the RNC, the Republican National Committee, has already acknowledged that the Russians broke into their servers and simply
sure, sure.
did not release the information. We know that Trump has been to Russia and his family. We know that he has relationships there. And we know that the potential for blackmail and manipulation of both him and the party establishment, I mean, just enormous. The guy is so vulnerable. He is obviously a potential asset to the Russians.
Yeah. And what comes to mind is, I'm sure he's impressing his wife, because she's from Russia. You know, hey,
I think the wife is from Slovakia. one of the Slavic countries. I think she is from Slovakia.
Oh, okay. Well, see, that goes because so much I do.
Well, you know, I do this show, and I have to dig deep in order to have some knowledge of what I'm talking about. But I'm not sure she's from Slovakia, but I know she's not from Russia.
Okay. Look at that. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Art. Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM, and you can support us at kpft.org. Okay, we have a couple of open lines. The phone number is 713-526-5738, and so far we're moving along pretty quick, so your chances of getting on the air are pretty near 100% at this point. Scotty, you are on the air. Thanks for calling. How are you doing tonight?
Thank you. Fine. Yeah. Well, I am encouraged that there is a lot of public opposition. And state of California, its political leaders are leading the charge.
And New York.
Okay.
New York, the Attorney General there, the Attorney General there has also made it very, very clear that he will be resisting a lot of what he expects to come from the Trump administration.
Okay, the Attorney General of New York has been suing Trump in a civil suit about Trump University, and that's been going on some time.
That was settled.
Except there was a settlement.
There was a settlement where $24 million went to the plaintiffs, and there was a $1 million fine that went to the state.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they need to keep up the fight and not get discouraged.
Yeah, and I have an article that I'm going to read, not in its entirety, but substantially, that on the one hand is very dark, but also gives a little hope at the end. And I'm going to get to that when we maybe get a little slower on the phones.
And while I'm thinking about it, Mrs. Trump is, or Melania, is from Slovenia.
Slovenia. I was close.
Yeah, that is the northwest corner of Yugoslavia.
Correct.
Bounded by Austria and Italy and Croatia.
I think Slovenia
it's north of Hungary.
Right.
And I have not been in Slovenia, but I have gone through Slovakia to get from Budapest to Prague and Berlin.
Slovenia, I think, was either the first or second province to secede from Yugoslavia. It was Croatian Slovenia or Slovenian Croatia, I forget.
Yeah, I imagine, yeah. And Slovenia is on the Euro.
Yes, they are part of the EU, which is going through its own pains right now.
Yeah,
Slovakia The Russians are going to have like this mother of all New Year's celebrations. It's like everything is going Russia's way. The discord, the right wings, the fascist-leaning parties. I mean, man, I'm telling you, I want to see the Russians a little unhappy for some point.
Okay, Poland and Hungary are becoming anti-democratic.
Yes, I've been reading that Poland may be a precursor to what the United States will look like in a couple of years.
Possibly.
It's a warning.
Only if we let it.
Well, you know, they say that right now, I forget what it is, the Something and Liberty Party in Poland, even with all their anti-democratic movement political stuff, they still have a 38% approval rating.
Okay.
Which is more than they had when they were elected.
Okay. So pollsters are able to work in that country.
So far, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, Hillary Clinton got, Trump, only got 53 or 54% in Texas. In fact, he only did a little better than he did in Ohio.
Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by about 2.8 million, which is about 2.1%, which normally is a winning fraction, except for the 70,000 votes that happen to be in the wrong places.
Yeah, 54% in Harris County, 61% in Dallas County, 66% in Travis County.
Texas may become purple if they don't do an adequate degree of voter suppression, but they're sure trying.
Well, I wouldn't call it exactly purple yet, but it has certainly gotten more Democratic than it was when Obama ran.
It's getting purplish.
Yes, sort of. But I would not. I'd say Harris County is still purple. Because I think you have to look at how it votes in off-year elections, how it's going to vote. It did not vote for Wendy Davis in 2014, and we don't know how it's going to do in 2018.
Well, I mean, I haven't trusted elections in this country since 2000. I think electronic voting, I think, will destroy us as
a
nation.
No.
And, you know, we have had so much voter suppression in Texas that it's really hard to say what Texas would do if not for the Supreme Court decision nullifying part of the Voting Rights Act.
Well, I don't see that in Harris County, because...
No, but Texas.
Well...
And even in Harris County...
There are other parts of Texas.
Even in Harris County, we don't know... Even in Harris County, we don't know what the results would have been except for the voter suppression since the nullification of that portion of the Voting Rights Act.
Okay, well... Hillary got 54%, and we had a countywide sweep of countywide elected officials.
Yeah.
Got a new district attorney, a new sheriff, a new tax assessor collector.
And you know what the Republicans are thinking? Damn, what? We just didn't do enough voter suppression.
Well, you know, but I do not think Harris County is not out of reach for the Democrats.
No, it is not. And that's because of immigration from more democratically.
That's because of more immigration.
Scotty, that's because of more immigration from democratic leaning parts of the country.
Yeah, well, I don't believe in saying that something is out of reach for Democrats unless it's really heavily Republican.
We're going to have, Democrats are going to have a serious fight over the next few years. And again, that's something I want to read an article about later.
Okay.
I'm going to have to let you go.
There's been some infighting, which I think is unproductive.
Scotty, I'm going to have to let you go. I've got five other people waiting online.
Okay.
I'm trying
to get
everybody on. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, next up is Paul. Paul, thank you for waiting. It is Paul, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Paul,
hello,
you're on
hello.
The air. Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'm listening to the callers, and I'm listening to your characterizations of the Trump administration, and it the way I see it, and I've been, you know, watching presidents since the 70s. First of all, I don't recall seeing three terms of the same party. The next point is the Democratic Party precipitated Donald Trump and his profiteering and his philandering and his, you know, out of control mania, and the people he picked. How did they do that? In my opinion, Hillary Clinton went after Gaddafi for reasons I have yet to understand. That was poor. That was a poor foreign policy decision. And the Democratic Party also got identified with gay marriage and open borders. And
all right, let me just respond to a little of that before we get too far in. First of all, three terms: Reagan, Bush. So
okay.
We got that.
All right.
As far as
but that's
Hillary,
unusual. Would you not say
I would say it's not a pattern. I would say it is not a pattern, but it is not unheard of either.
True.
I mean, look at Roosevelt. Hell, Roosevelt four terms.
Yeah, I don't go that far back. But my point is that if it. We precipitated the Democrats, and I'm a Democrat, and I actually voted for Hillary, but I'm also glad she lost. I think she was a weak candidate. I think she came with a boatload of
she
controversial
She won
baggage.
By 2.1% of the popular vote. How can people keep saying she's a weak candidate? She won the election by a lot.
I understand. I believe, okay, just me personally, I believe that the issues... Hillary got identified with a lot of social issues. Her foreign policy considerations, I think a lot of that kind of, she didn't get credit for a lot of whatever positive things she did.
Well, she didn't
policy.
Get the chance because the media kept talking email. So, you know, and Trump got
exactly.
$2 billion worth of so-called earned media.
Well, and I think and you look at it, both parties are actually corporations. And so they did what corporations do. And, the stronger, more financially funneled corporation actually won the election. They used the media as simply is just an arm of big corporate America, arms dealers, and big – because Trump won on media hype and sizzle. Okay, he had no substance. He had the essence of him is basically unacceptable to most Americans.
Well,
however, most Americans, there's only 38%, there's only 38 million, you know, quote unquote, gay people in America. That's the number I've heard. But we have 350 million citizens. Most Americans are not gay. Most Americans don't like open borders. Most Americans don't like sanctuary cities. And after, I believe if Hillary had said, okay, we're gonna really enforce our immigration laws, and we're gonna really, you know, the bathroom bills, blah 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 blah. I mean, those are issues that are not terribly important to most Americans. Trump sold
well, first,
us a bunch of
wait
hype.
A minute, wait a minute. First, okay. let's. I mean, I'm gonna have to let you go in a minute, but I want to respond to a
sure.
little of this. First of all, if 10%, let's just say in round numbers, if 10%
sure.
of the population, which I think is fair, is LGBT, and there might be another 10% that, you know, they may be sort of bi-ish, but let's say the 10%. That's already a larger population than the number of Jews in the United States. That's a larger population, I think, than the number of Muslims in the United States. That's a larger population, I think, than the number of at least illegal Hispanics, maybe Hispanics in the United States. We're talking
yes.
about a big number, a big fraction of the population. So they should have a say.
Well, they did have a say. It's just that they took their say. They wanted to make their say the majority voice. I think it got
no,
too much.
No, they wanted to protect their rights as Americans. And even
okay.
though they are a minority, minorities have rights, something that
of
conservatives
course.
Often don't think so.
Majority rule, minority rights.
Majority, well, and, majority rule, not majority tyranny. Now, again, I've got this article. I've got to read it, and I know I've got people online, and I'm sort of like looking for a slow period, but I really, really want to read this. All right, I'm going to let you wrap up for a moment, Paul, because you know I've kind of jumped in. Just if you can wrap up briefly, and I'll go on to the next caller.
Well, just like the Bush administration precipitated Obama with his wars and his military contractors. And
you're talking about
the
Bush wars yeah. and military contractors.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay, we know that it was based on weapons of mass destruction that were, you know, so minuscule that they could not have really harmed America.
They were based on, it was based on lies.
Basically. And so now, and so he precipitated Obama. We would have taken anybody, you know, other than Bush or Republicans. Now, same thing. Okay, many Americans would rather have taken anybody. Okay, yeah, they voted Democratic because Hillary was the best that the Democratic Party could produce. However, you know, it got identified with some issues that are not important, to, quote unquote, the majority. The things that matter, I would say, to most Americans.
Okay,
not all,
you
but
keep saying
most.
The majority. She won the election. She has 2.1% more votes than Trump. She
well, then how
has
did she
two,
blow it? How
because,
did she blow it?
Because there were, in my opinion, there was a manipulation of the electorate. Not, I mean, whether or not there was election fraud, I think, is an open question. But there was certainly enough voter suppression that it skewed the results. And maybe there was some election fraud.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, let me ask you this. Were these not pretty much these were the two worst candidates American voters have seen in 50 years?
I disagree.
Worst of the worst,
I disagree.
Know?
I think that Hillary is probably the most qualified presidential candidate since Dwight Eisenhower.
No doubt. She just has so much baggage and so much controversy.
But the baggage...
She was suspect but
the,
as well. She
but the
was
baggage
just
is character assassination. Can I ask how old you are, Paul?
I'll be 60 next month.
Okay, so I'm just a few years older than you. Do you realize that the Clintons, as a couple, have endured 35 years of constant character assassination from the right? They have spent government money to the tune of probably something like $100 million in various aspects of trying to make them look bad, trying to find something indictable on them. So, you know, to say that she's the worst candidate, to say the Clintons are bad candidates, they're untrustworthy, this is 35 years of right-wing propaganda,
well, okay,
mainly.
I'll say this and get off the phone.
Okay.
I think a lot of Americans simply didn't want to see a dynasty-ish presidential parade.
Well, then they,
I mean,
then they elected the wrong guy.
We've had Bushes. Both of them, you know, Trump is a carnival barker, and Clinton is who she is. Of course she's qualified. It's just that people, I think many people, and I won't say most because that's maybe too many, but I know I personally did not want to see anything looking like dynasty-ish in the White House.
Trump is going to do his best to create a dynasty. Thank you so much, Paul, for calling. I'm sorry that I took the last word. All right. Take care. Thank you for calling. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM. You can go to my website, thinkwingradio.com. Follow me at Think Wing Radio on Twitter. And support kpft.org. Just go in there and click on the tip jar or donation, whatever they're calling it these days, and whatever you can give, however much or little. Okay, next up is Kevin. Kevin, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. How are you doing tonight? I'm having to move about five. I'm trying to do about 4 or 5 minutes a person to get everybody on. So,
I hear you. Well, I got in.
Woo-hoo. Yes, you did. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, so how did World War One start? It was like,
how did World War One start? Is that the question?
Yeah, someone was assassinated. Some Archduke of Hungarian.
Archduke Ferdinand of Serbia, who was second in line to the Habsburg throne. Assassinated by a Serbian nationalist, and the Habsburgs then decided, this is what I have read in terms of doing like research for stuff. Apparently the way this went down was the Habsburgs decided to punish Serbia for this assassination. And that, I think, is what got the Russians involved. And when the Russians got involved, the Germans got involved. And when the Germans, we had a lot of bilateral treaties going on. And when the Germans got involved, the French and the British got involved, because you had all of these bilateral treaties. Also, what's kind of an amusing sidebar is pretty much all of the royalty involved in World War One, all of the different empires and nations, they were all related. They were all cousins. So the Brits, the Russians, the Germans, the Habsburgs, the Italians, they're literally all related, cousins or distant cousins. So it's been called one of the largest family feuds in history.
Yeah, well, they brought down the Ottoman Empire in Germany, for sure.
It brought down the Ottoman Empire. It brought down the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Yeah. It brought down the German Reich. It exhausted the British.
How that sort of worked out.
I'm sorry?
That's amazing how that sort of worked out.
I have said many times, and I still believe it, that essentially we're not talking about different wars when we talk about World War One, World War Two, Vietnam, the Middle East. I think all of this is essentially a 100-year war with intermissions, because I think World War One unleashed so many variables that are now essentially at the roots of a lot of the conflict. The Ottomans controlled the Middle East. They suppressed all of this stuff. The Austro-Hungarian Empire suppressed the Balkan stuff. And it's like, As a result of World War One and then World War Two, all of this stuff was just left out. You know, suddenly it was all out in the open, and everybody started killing each other.
I think it was pretty well strategically planned out by Edward. I'm sorry. That was pretty good, Mike. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
That 7 o'clock slot, the monitor had a pretty good overview of your earlier days, 1975 austerity with Donald Trump coming into New York when the city was insolvent with the banks.
I actually moved to Houston because the unemployment rate in New York around that time was about 10%.
Yeah, so
it was like in a depression.
So this is, you know, austerity school. I mean, they met the monitor host even played. You know, this is, you know, school of austerity, and that's we know as AKA South Chicago, Milton Friedman, Keynesian, radical Keynesian economics. This is what Thatcher did. This is what Reagan did.
I don't think you can call that Keynesian economics. Radical
Keynesian economics is privatization, and this is the school of Milton Friedman. It's called austerity, South Chicago austerity, radical Keynesian economics. My dad used to teach this stuff, and he told me about this part. And what we're seeing now, Trump coming into, is now the policies that the Republicans couldn't pass. Slick Willie did with, you know, the code, prison code reform, getting rid of welfare.
Remember that he had 6 years of a Republican Congress, and to some extent it was a matter of doing the least damage he could.
That last term was a breeze. You know, when Robert Rubens removed Glass-Steagall, they loved it. You know, they all loved him some privatization. So we're going to see here Trump coming in with all deployments of these Betsy DeVos, Secretary of Education. They're all private. This is South Chicago radical KZN.
I'm just afraid they're going to try to sell off like the national parks. I mean, I could foresee that as a policy.
Now, this is the final, you know, asset. This is Auster. They're going to basically come in and never already start privatization, privatization. Clinton did it. That Junior spent the last 3 years going to all those airports trying to push what? Privatization of Social Security. I think you remember that.
Bush, in the beginning of his second term, tried to push that. It was sort of dead on arrival.
That's all he did. And so the policies that the Republicans going to do, Clinton did, policies that the crimes, the war crimes of all the torture and that the NDA, National Defense Authorization Act.
Yeah, I have to admit, we have committed war crimes.
That Obama made legal, those crimes. And when Obama was inaugurated on January 2013, the sequester that Paul Ryan wanted to do to help food stamps, $400 billion, he doubled that in March. He went $900 billion in sequester cutting food stamps. So the guy I mentioned before about the swinging the pendulum every day, well, it is, these are actors, and we're just going to watch them, and we're going to put all our eggs in them. Clinton is the establishment and has been. And that's what the populace was voting against. And look what we're going to get with Trump. It's going to be pretty,
bad.
Bad. All right.
All right. Thank you so much, Kevin. Right. Yeah, time's up. Appreciate your calling. Is it Johnny? Is that who we're up to now? Okay. What's your announcement? Hold on. Bob has an announcement.
Hi, everyone. Venetia called earlier. She's a member of the staff here at KPFT, as well as is Mike Allen from time to time in the prison show. And they have both been up to Standing Rock in Bismarck area, North Dakota. And Mike, I think, spent at least a month there. There's some organizing taking place now to approach essentially a carbon issue in the Pecos area out near Alpine. And Thursday evening this week from 7 to 9 over at the Unitarian Church at 5200 Fannin, there will be an event. And donations are requested. And if you could come by and collect information and learn about some of this, you'd be more than welcome. That's Thursday night, 5200 Fannin. You know, it's just north of Herman Park there, north of Benz, from 7 to 9 at the First Unitarian Church. Thursday.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. All right. I don't think I need to do a station break quite yet. So, Johnny, you're on the air. How are you doing tonight? Thanks for calling.
So far, so good. Can people donate over their computer to the event Thursday if they can't be there in person?
I do not know. Bob, is there a website?
There is, but I'm not sure I remember it. I saw it only today.
Announce at the end of the program if you can.
It was connected to Standing Rock, not the Pegasus.
Okay. I'll just Google Standing Rock.
Standing Rock and Unitarian Church, and you'll probably find it.
Unitarian Church. Okay. Two things are bugging me.
Yep.
But real quick.
Just two.
We need to flip the script a little bit at the risk of sounding flippant.
Uh-huh.
Instead of aspiring our state to be purple and then blue,
uh-huh,
how about instead of cyanotic colors, we go for pink? Because pink is associated with profusion. And plus, it has the added benefit of pissing off a whole bunch of right-wing nuts who don't like that association.
I'm not married to any particular color. You do know why we have red and blue, don't you? This is kind of an interesting story.
Tell me real quick.
In the days,
I think I know.
I've mentioned it on the air before, but it's interesting. In the days before color TV was common or even, you know, dominant or even common, in order to show which states the Democrats won and which states the Republican won, essentially they were talking shades of gray. And blue and red were like the colors of choice that translated into sort of a darker gray and a lighter gray. And the colors for a long time were interchangeable. It wasn't always the Republicans that were red. It wasn't always the Democrats that were blue. But then, apparently, somewhere along the line, when we started doing color and someone talked about red states versus blue states, and that kind of locked it in. But it started out as just being the difference in black and white between dark gray and light gray.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because I'm old enough to remember before we had color TV,
yep,
that you could watch various shows and you could actually tell who the blonde people, blonde-headed people were.
Do you know that in the original Superman, when it was in black and white, his costume, the blue was gray, and I think the red was brown, and the yellow was white. And you can see pictures of this online, the original Superman costume in black and white that they had so that it would look right on the TV screen, even though the colors to our eyes and color look totally screwy.
You do your homework, my friend.
I do my best.
To KPFT and Pacifica. Okay, the reasons why I called.
Yep.
One thing I really, two things that are bugging me right now is the fact that I think Democrats as a group, as a party, are afraid, I think, to challenge contests like at the federal level, like the presidential contest, is because they're afraid, and you hinted at this, the fact that they think that the people on the extreme right are going to act out like babies and resort to violence. And I say to that, screw that. This is too important for a few babies. Stand up to them, because most of them are bullies, okay?
The Republicans are very quick to challenge any result, any election. I think they manipulate them when possible. I think that the Democrats, you know, this is a thing. Liberals by nature, and I'm going to use the term advisedly, but I think liberals by nature tend to take a more intellectual attitude toward things, a more mental attitude, whereas conservatives tend to take a more emotional attitude. And I've talked about this before.
More sanguine. And I think there's room in the intellectual realm to start understanding that we can't stay in that realm. We have to be ready, willing, and able, at least a majority of us or a significant number of us, to engage in more physical or physicality. Because if we don't, they know that's their advantage. They think might is right.
I will say metaphorical physicality. You know, we shouldn't have riots in the streets and we shouldn't have bombs or shootings. But I think.
Okay, I'm glad you said that. That brings me to my second bugaboo.
I think as the quote unquote more intellectual party, I think that intellectuals should be able to adapt to circumstances because they have the reasoning capabilities to do so. And I think it's obvious that when you have a party that is, I think, authoritarian by nature and willing to contest anything in order to get and hold power, I think from an intellectual standpoint, you need to be prepared to fight that on their terms.
That's correct.
Okay, so are we done?
Oh, and on that, and you just hinted at something else, the second thing that's bothering me.
Uh-huh.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but did you not, on more than one occasion now, in the past few weeks, refer to Mike Pence as a rational extremist or a reasonable extremist?
A rational. Not reasonable, but rational in the extent that I might disagree with every policy he would try to initiate, but I don't think he'll blow up the world.
This is where I've disagreed with you before on this. There's nothing rational about his policies.
No, I'm not. No. Don't
compare him to someone like the activist on the left.
No, don't get me wrong.
They were both rational and reasonable, in spite of how extreme and unrelenting the right-wing power structure were back then in regards to the prosecution of Vietnam War.
Johnny, I never said...
No. There was no change.
Hold on.
You can't keep doing the same thing over and over again with right-wingers and expect a different outcome.
Johnny, I never said that Pence's policies were rational. His policies are extreme. His beliefs are extreme. His statements are extreme. I simply believe that as horrible a president as he would be, we would probably still have a country and a series of, and a network of alliances when he left the White House, and I think he would leave the White House. These are things I'm not so sure of with Trump. I'm not sure Trump will leave the White House.
If it quacks like the duck and looks like the ducks, guess what? It's a Republican.
Okay.
Give them an inch, they don't take a foot, they don't take a yard, they take a GD mile.
Okay, we've both had our say, and I'm going to have to let you go and move on to the next caller.
Okay, just be with my friends. It's going to get rough out there.
I know
Bring
it is.
Bring your life, buoy.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for calling, Johnny. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner on controls. You can support KPFT by going to kpft.org. contribute what you can, when you can, as much or as little as possible. And thank you for listening, even if you have not or cannot contribute. ThinkWingRadio.com is my site, at ThinkWing Radio on Twitter. And Henry, you're on the air. You've been waiting very patiently throughout that whole spiel. So how are you doing tonight?
Doing well. Evening, Mike.
Good evening.
Been enjoying listening to some of the listeners that have called in and offered their thoughts and opinions. I was calling with a bit of a different angle here, still around, I guess, the election and whatnot, but removing the politics of government and removing Donald Trump, the man, and Hillary Clinton, the woman, I am interested to hear your opinion as a radio show host about the different sides with respect to policies on business. If anyone has looked at the market since the election, it's been on a huge tear.
Yes.
You know, making new highs. And it would seem to imply that the private sector, that the profit-making centers in America, that the people working in America are anticipating a better future, not necessarily because of anything Donald Trump is doing, and not necessarily because it's Hillary Clinton not in office, but simply because there's a premonition of a paradigm shift from the Obama administration.
I agree with that. I will also point out that it was either Lenin or Stalin who said something to the effect that when it comes time to hang the capitalists, they'll compete to sell us the rope. you understand the connection, right?
Sure.
So
there's always a buck to be made.
So, yeah, there's always a buck to be made, even if it's going to be at the expense of your own neck, literally. I think that the business community is anticipating a relaxation of credit rules, banking rules, pollution rules, safety rules, public property rules. You know, I think that they're seeing basically an opportunity to, I'm going to use the word advisedly, I think an opportunity to rape the country financially, economically, socially.
So I can appreciate the economic concept of the tragedy of the commons, where when there's no caretaker for a public good, it gets abused and ultimately destroyed.
And once it's gone, it's gone.
Right. What I cannot understand from a policy or even a debate point of view are those that commit to the idea that somehow government is the best equipped thing to regulate and to regiment and to truly govern some of these resources and assets. I just don't think that government does a very good job at anything beyond perpetuating itself. And so from that standpoint, to the extent that there's the potential for just less government in things, whether that's business or in our lives or regulation or what have you, that to me sounds like at least a refreshing breath of fresh air.
Why? Do you feel like you've been oppressed by the government lately?
Absolutely.
In what way?
Look at something as small and as simple as just postage stamps. I mean, postage has doubled in the last decade.
Do you know why that is?
And the Postal Service doesn't turn a profit.
Do you know why that is?
Because the Postal Service doesn't turn a profit, because mail is an outmoded form of communication.
Incorrect. That is incorrect. The reason that the post office appears to not turn a profit is because the Republican Congress decided that they should have to fund 70 years of pension liabilities pretty much up front. So the fact that it looks like they're not turning a profit is strictly a bookkeeping finagle forced on them by Congress. In actual point of fact, they are not losing money. And if you ever look at your junk mail, you know that there's still plenty of mail going out there that the post office collects on. So it is the Republican philosophy to do everything they can to break government, either by cutting funding or passing certain regulations that are crazy. And then they say, you see, after breaking it, government doesn't work. We need to privatize it. And that's the strategy. And they did that with the post office. The post office is not losing money in any normal bookkeeping accounting sense.
I would personally, just for myself, you know, shy away from terms like Republicans and Democrats. That tends to politicize things.
It is political. That's why you have to politicize it. It is a philosophical difference. The Republicans.
I can concede whatever the CBO says about the profitability from a cash flow perspective of the Postal Service, and what they say is that it's a money losing business. But just to take your example, I am of the school of being cost conscious as opposed to spendthrift, and
I agree.
Think that has been one large difference between conservatives and progressives or liberals or whatever you want to call them. That they are progressive in the sense about continuing to find avenues for the government to assist in things and raise money to fund those initiatives, whereas conservatives tend to be looking for ways to reduce
to some extent that used to be true. But you have to remember, recently we've been fighting 15 years of war where instead of raising taxes there was a tax cut. So the Republicans decided they would borrow money to fight the war and run a deficit instead of raising taxes, because that would make the war unpopular. So, yes, I'm going to draw the distinction between Republicans, i.e. conservatives, and Democrats, more or less, i.e. liberals, progressives. They do have different approaches to government, different philosophies of government. I'm not saying that either one is right, and I'm not saying that either one is wrong, but when one or the other is dominant, you have a problem. And right now, the right wing is dominant.
Well, certainly whenever the pendulum swings far to one side, it isn't healthy for the balance.
I hate the pendulum.
But I consistently am flabbergasted by all forms of commentary, the media, radio, newspapers, what have you, to just politicize all of these issues when it should be more of a dollars and cents question. And if you want to talk about funding the war and who's raising, you know, the debt to do that, I would argue that it's, you know, not conservatives looking to not raise taxes and you know, pull for Peter to pay Paul.
They fought a war with a tax cut.
Are bankrupt.
They fought a war with a tax cut.
Look at the highway funding bills. I mean, nothing is fundable. You can't even pay the payroll for the federal government with the current tax bill that the country's breaking in.
And I could argue that that's all because we're not taxing the people with the money. The people that have 90% of the wealth are not paying their fair share of taxes.
Well, they're paying their fair share on a progressive scale. I mean, absolutely.
No, they're not. No, they are not paying their fair share on a progressive scale at all. Anyway, I'm sorry. Nothing personal. But I'm running out of time, and I have to let you go,
sure.
And I apologize. Okay, well, call back. We'll talk again.
I appreciate the new angle there, Mike.
Okay, thank you, Henry. Call back sometime. All right, we've got Jerry and Gary on the line, and because these guys are regular callers, I am now going to take a couple of minutes and read the chunks of this article, and then Gary will be up. I'm hoping I'll have a couple of minutes, and then he'll be able to comment. Okay, this is an article by Ryan Cooper, called How Republicans' Frightening Power Play in North Carolina Will Go National. And I guess I'm going to end up reading about three-quarters of this. The Republican Party in North Carolina is giving the rest of the country an object lesson in the difference between tyranny and democracy. Met with a close loss in the 2016 governor's race brought on by passing a ton of really unpopular legislation, the North Carolina GOP is now going down the old path of rigging the electoral machinery against the opposition party. Republicans are using their control of the state legislature to strip away huge swaths of authority from the governor's office. Republicans are making one legislative push to give themselves an iron grip over the state and county election boards and curtail the power of the state Supreme Court, which just gained a Democratic majority. And another to sharply restrict the governor's ability to appoint bureaucrats and influence the public education system. It is an attempt to overturn the election via legislative chicanery. Essentially, the Republican Party has, quote, used the power of the state to protect itself from the voters of the state, as Jamel Bowie writes. And there are links in the article, and I have links on my site. This should be viewed as a potential test run for the nation as a whole. Republicans have near unprecedented dominance across all levels of governance in the United States, but their party and their president-elect are actually quite unpopular. Chances of an electoral backlash are very good, so to cling to power, Republicans will likely cheat. Now, this is the article speaking, not me. A democracy is a nation in which the government is chosen by a free vote of citizens. To ensure a free vote, Democratic rights are protected, freedom of speech, assembly, and the press, freedom from unreasonable searches, etc., etc. Without a real and freely made choice between competing candidates, there can be no true democracy. A tyranny, by contrast, is a nation in which government is imposed on the citizens without choice and dissent is repressed. But these two are often more on a spectrum than a binary distinction. Partial tyrannies have genuine enfranchisement for some portion of the population while stamping down the rest. This sort of tyranny seems to be the Republican aim, and it's important to realize that despite the traditional bleeding of American chauvinism about liberty, such a quasi-tyrannical system is not remotely at odds with our history. Wilmington, North Carolina, rang in the worst phase of Jim Crow when white supremacists executed a violent coup d'etat in 1898 against the duly elected government, the product of a fusionist black-white populist alliance, and killed dozens of people, torching many black homes and businesses. The first target and the spark for the coup was a black newspaper, freedom of the press often being the first thing to go when democracy is abrogated. After that, North Carolina and most of the rest of the South was a brutally repressive tyranny until 1965, when the Voting Rights Act and Civil Rights Act were passed. Tyranny is not the exception in North Carolina. For much of America's history, it was the rule. It's not hard to predict how Republicans will attempt to cement their control of political power during the Trump years. Indeed, the tyranny is already some distance towards completion. Part of the plan will be that they already have what they already have been doing since they won the 2010 midterms, and especially since the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act in 2013. They'll continue gerrymandering district boundaries to make it as hard as possible for Democrats to win. Indeed, the way those selfsame state legislative districts are drawn in North Carolina is already unconstitutional abrogation of civil rights, according to a federal court. They'll enact further targeted voter suppression measures to disenfranchise as many minorities and white liberals as possible, this time at the federal level if they can manage it. And for Democrats who manage to jump through all the hoops, they'll make it as onerous as possible for them to vote by restricting polling locations and hours in Democratic-leaning locations. As we're seeing in North Carolina, any inconveniently lost elections can be overturned so long as the GOP controls enough other chunks of government. Legislatures can core out a governor's power, or Supreme Court decisions can overturn legislation with reverse engineers' legal argle-bargle. Who knows where it will stop? And from there, it's really quite a short distance to stuffing ballot boxes or rigging election counts. It has all happened before. That does not mean all hope is lost. Even the height of Jim Crow is not a full dictatorship, and some sort of democratic ideology is deeply instilled in the American consciousness. Just look at how North Carolina Republicans kicked out the public and the press before passing their anti-democratic bills. They know what they're doing, and many are probably ashamed deep down. They would wilt before a popular front of sufficient size and power. That was an article, How Republicans' Frightening Power Play in North Carolina Will Go National. Somewhere here, I know the place that that came from, but it is on my website. There is a hot link there. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. I think we have maybe 30 seconds for Gary. You see, Gary never actually got a chance to talk. Okay, are we going to take Jerry for a few seconds? Okay, Jerry, you've got like literally 20 seconds.
Okay, well, first of all, Keynesian economics doesn't work the way old Kirk, or whatever his name is, brought up there.
Yeah,
and for another,
so.
You know, actually the taxation level in this country is like historically low.
Right.
And everything. The amount of tax that people are paying, you know, if you compare it to the rest of the OECD, we're at the very low end.
Okay, I'm going to let you go on that.
That's
because
it.
There's a quote
yeah,
that I want to read before we go. Thanks, Jerry. Coming out of the Constitutional Convention in 1787, anxious citizens gathered outside. A Mrs. Powell of Philadelphia asked Benjamin Franklin, "Well, doctor, what have we got, a republic or a monarchy?" And Franklin responded, "A republic, if you can keep it." Okay, Juan Flores is next up.
Getting 2017 off to a good start is all about setting the right tone. The Rothko Chapel is starting the new year by hosting a Crystal Bowl meditation at noon on Sunday, January 1st. Crystal Bowl meditation is a practice that creates rich, pure tones designed to aid practitioners in focus and relaxation. The meditation will be guided by Dana Shamus, founder of Bayou Bliss Yoga. The Rothko Chapel is located at 3900 Yupon Street, KPFT Houston.
K
KPFT features Houston's most diverse radio lineup. But why is this kind of programming important? Just think about it. Deep in the heart of Texas, KPFT listeners get acquainted with ideas and sounds that few people ever have a chance to hear. KPFT brings the world to listeners. This is week two of KPFT's Quiet Campaign. Week one got off to a good start, but we need your help today. So visit kpft.org if you appreciate this unique kind of radio. As the year comes to a close, we'll be reminding you this month about the importance of this amazing outlet. Even if you don't listen to everything, isn't the fact that this option is available important to you? Give your year-end gift now at kpft.org. KPFT Houston.